So I'll start with a guided meditation. That's usually it'll be related to working with their different viewpoints within ourselves, mindfulness of the thinking mind. And then I'll give a talk on working with varying viewpoints at the 30-minute time, and then we'll save around the last half an hour for discussion, questions and answers. Sound good? All right, prepare to meditate. I'll ring a bell to start and three at the end. So if you like to take deep breaths at the beginning of your practice, it can be very helpful to help you regulate, relax, recenter. And making these breaths as deep as you need them to be right now. And it can be helpful to get grounded at the beginning of a meditation in the body if you don't have a lot of trauma. So sensing the body sitting here. And you might sense the movement of the body as you breathe. The temperature, feeling the feet on the ground, your body pressing against the cushion or the chair.
Our first instinct is to reject it. When we ask, what is it that I need to see?
And staying with the body as long as it feels helpful for you right now. If the mind is particularly busy, you might want to spend more time with the body. Real-time sensing sensations in the body, tingling, throbbing, pressure. Coolness, warmth. Perhaps the sense of hearing is dominant for you right now, or sounds might waft in and out. And seeing if you can relax and soften this body. Giving it permission to feel just as it feels right now. And from time to time, you may lose connection with the body. The mind might start weaving a story. It's normal. It's not a problem. As soon as you realize that, inviting your attention back to the body, the felt sense of this body. And if you have a different anchor, home base that you like to use in your practice, feeling free to go to your home base, your anchor. And find that relaxed, alert connection to your anchor. And invite all the different parts of yourself to stay with the anchor as long as they're able to or willing to. And from time to time, the mind might start its chatter. And just noticing the wanting thoughts, the not wanting thoughts, the preferential thoughts, the judging thoughts. If it's helpful for you to label judging, wanting, seeing the thoughts clearly, and then coming back to your anchor. If at any point your internal experience becomes overwhelming, just too much, then you may want to open your eyes, look around the room, get regrounded in the body. You can continue a seeing meditation. Or you can take a few deep breaths, relax, and start again. It can be helpful at times if the mind is doing a lot of thinking to just say, silently label thinking or busy mind or worrying, planning, rehearsing, whatever's happening. And then come back to the breath or your anchor or the felt sense of the body. The practice is not about staying with your anchor, but about starting again over and over and being kind and compassionate with yourself and your experience. And if you'd like to do the rain practice and a really strong visitor is present, then you may want to recognize what's happening here, allow and accept it, soften, investigate how it's affecting the heart, the body, and the mind. And do this all with a non-attached, nurturing awareness. As long as it's needed, either coming back to spaciousness, silence, or your anchor. If you would like to do a little contemplation mindfulness practice. And if you can come up with a time recently that you have heard a different viewpoint that was felt very troubling to you. And replaying that in your mind's eye. And as you replay it, seeing if you can be with the sensations in the body. Notice where they're located. You might notice contraction. What's contracting? Is it the heart, the belly, the throat, or wherever? Just noticing. How intense is the contraction? Is it tolerable? Are these sensations moving or changing? Or are they staying the same? If you lose it, you might have to replay what you heard again. Notice if they're easing. Or not, or increasing. And seeing if you can sense if any emotions are present. And holding them with kindness. You might want to name the emotions. Anger, hurt, confusion, whatever's here. Notice if the mind jumps in with its narratives or stories. Inviting all the parts of you to go back to the body, to the heart. And then having compassion for yourself, for being a human, for having these difficulties. May be helpful to say, this is hard. This is challenging. Can I be with this? You might need to take an occasional deep breath, let go of your stories, come back to the body, and practicing self-compassion. This is what it's like to be a human being. And sensing everyone in this call today who's ever had difficulties. I'm sensing their struggles as well. Are not much different from your own. And imagine each of us connecting in a deep level, supporting one another. Having compassion for one another. In our shared humanity. And wishing for ourselves to be free from stress, from contraction, from dissatisfaction. I'm wishing for all of us here to be free from stress, contraction, dissatisfaction. Wishing all beings on this planet, all humans, are free from stress, contraction, dissatisfaction. That we all have the resources we need to live a happy, healthy life. And that we're all deeply cared for. All right. Thank you for meditating together. I hope the little part at the end was helpful in instructions on how to work with ourselves when we're in reaction to different viewpoints. That's what that was meant for. So if you want to move your body and get realigned, wake up, maybe stretch a little bit. And just allowing this talk to, you know, like rain, if you're out in the rain and it's a beautiful day, just settle onto your nervous system. Whatever feels, you know, like it's helpful, that's great. Whatever you feel is not helpful, letting that go. To the best of your ability. And just know that there's no way that I can cover everything that could be said about working with varying viewpoints in 30 minutes. I always try though. Anyhow, so working with varying viewpoints, like I'm insinuating, there is no magic bullet to being open to everyone's views. It's a practice. But we want to start with having the intention to listen to others' views as mindfully as possible. That's a great intention to start with, right? You know, the Buddhist path has a lot of really great instructions for working with right speech and right intention and things that I'll be covering. But it's also often glorified and presented as this solitary path. That we're supposed to sit on retreat for years and or in caves and just practice like our hair is on fire. In fact, I listen to, I play talks for my Sangha on Sunday mornings. So I listen to a lot of other Buddhist talks, and there was a nun talking about how most of their monastery nuns are on retreat for years and years and years, if not their whole lives. And I'm like, whoa, solitary retreat for your whole life. But most of us here, I'm assuming, are not on the solitary, silent, monastic path or on retreat for your whole life, right? We're trying to wake up while being in our lives, right? We're engaging, where a lot of us are still working, engaging with our partners, raising our children or grandchildren, dealing with family members, all while being engaged in the world and wanting to have a conscientious practice where we can wake up in our lives, right? That's what lay people are doing. I spent time as a monastic and then decided, no, I wanted to practice the lay life and wake up in my life. But from this vantage point, from the lay practice vantage point, everything that happens during our modern daily lives are the raw material for our practice. Right. Nothing gets to be excluded. It all gets to be included. In fact, it's much easier to sit in a monastery and not have all these external factors like having to take care of money and having to take care of our aging parents or whatever is happening. This lay life is rich for us to be able to really practice. So leading my sangha and retreats and a lot of Buddhist events, I hear over and over again that one of the biggest difficulties people are having dealing with right now is dealing with radically different views of others, right? It's a real challenge. And we're in a time in our world where there's a lot of schisms and really strong viewpoints. So how do we deal with this, right? I think what I want to start with is learning to work with our own viewpoints first. It's really important that we want to look at our own views, see them clearly, practice being non-attached to our own views, right? So that's the direction we're going to go in. And then how to work with other people's views, right? So the first thing that I want to mention is that we need to understand that our views are conditioned. Our views are conditioned. This is really important. And this comes from the Buddha's teaching on dependent origination, paticca samuppada. We used to chant paticca samuppada every day when I was a nun, because it's so important for us to understand that everything is conditioned and co-arising, right? This applies to thoughts as well as objects, to all of us, to each and every human being. None of us are exempt from this. Nothing, no one exists independently of one another, right? That everything is a product of something else, which is a product of something else. Even our thoughts, our beliefs, our patterns are conditioned. They're conditioned by our families, our culture, our education, every experience we've had, our genetic predispositions, right? We, based on everything that has happened up to this point, we view things the way we do because of all of the conditions that have arisen, right? And a great example for me is, and I hope I don't insult anybody by talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, because it's been really alive for me and my family. But since I was a child, since I was born, I've been flooded with the Palestinian perspective from relatives who shared their views as victims in Israel and how they were kicked off their land, abused, or continue to be abused, the ones that have stayed there. To this day, I keep hearing reports from family members over there. So I'm very, and I'm hearing from relatives. I have two cousins who have spouses who've lost just, hordes of family members in Gaza, death, who've been killed. So I am very, very aware that my conditioning is that my views, that I'm going to have biased views towards being sympathetic towards Palestinians because of my conditioning, and they are of my heritage. And this is really important for me to continually to remember that I've been conditioned. But the Buddha taught us not to cling to anything, including our views and our opinions, right? In the Adivacchagata Sutta, the Buddha cautioned Vacchagota that any strong position one can take is a thicket of views, a wilderness of views, a contortion of views, a wreathing of views, a fetter of views, which is accompanied by suffering and does not lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, to calm, direct knowledge, to full awakening. And in the Magandhya Sutta, the Buddha says, those who cling to perceptions and views wander the world offending people. Think I've mentioned this before. So, how many people have we offended with our clinging to our perceptions and our views? And the pretas, or the hungry ghosts, are represented in Buddhist cosmology as beings who are tormented by desire, that they can never get satiated. So, this hungry ghost realm is characterized by attachment and clinging. And this includes attachment and clinging to anything, including our views and our perceptions. In Buddhism, this is considered one of the six realms of cyclic existence, of samsara that we keep cycling in. And enlightenment is characterized by freeing oneself from these realms entirely. So we have to learn how to work to let go of clinging to our views and our perspectives. If we're stuck in the hungry ghost realm, we become fixated. We cling and fixate into our views, and we see them as right. Our views are right, and everyone else's views are wrong. Right? And then we want to, those of us who are really fixated and like to argue, we'll get on social media and have good old argue fests with other people. Once again, like the Buddha said, running around perhaps insulting others. The first thing the mind tends to say is, this isn't a view. This is not a perception. This is a fact, honey. This is based in fact. I know what the facts are. Yeah, but so just notice that when the mind starts wanting to justify our views as the right views, or and our perceptions and our may be accurate, right? And our views may be actually wholesome or helpful views, but it's our attachment to the view that's the problem. When we get fixated and entrapped in the mind, it obscures not only other view being open to other views, but it obscures the luminosity of the mind, the beautiful luminosity of the mind. Bhikkhu Bodhi, or no, Channasira Bhikkhu, says in Buddhism, right view is part of the Noble Eightfold Path, but attachment to views, even right views, is always a hindrance. Right? So that includes our attachment to our narratives, our stories, and what we think are the facts. Yeah, and it's amazing to me that people can believe a lot of different facts. Like, really? I mean, and they're even the facts that we choose to, or the news feeds that we choose to believe or listen to, are conditioned by our views. So if we have a particular view, we're going to go towards certain news sources because we look for evidence to support our view, and we can find a lot of them. And then, of course, social media gives the algorithms to supply us with like-minded information so that we can continue to get more and more ensconced and embedded in our view. So social media might be a problem for us, who knows, if we're attached to our views. So the Buddha instructed us to let go of our attachments to what we think, our views, interpretation, including to letting go of our surety of what we think is true. So in this case, it's impossible not to form preferences and opinions. We're going to have them, right? The question becomes, are we overly attached to them? And how do we know if we're overly attached to them? Well, the first answer is if we're suffering, right? If a particular view causes us a lot of suffering and wanting to argue and fight, then, oh, I'm attached. But I also want to mention that if we have an alternative way of living, versus what culture considers the norm, like LGBTQ, a lot of us are being demonized. Large number of people are being demonized. This is very painful. causes a lot of trauma, and this is not what I'm talking about. I don't, because I think this is different. It's other people being attached to their views that they're projecting onto other groups of people. That can be very painful, and it can be hurtful. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've heard people just say really hurt, damning things about Palestinians or about people of the Islamic faith, like, presenting them as all bombers or, just a lot. I've heard so many things that have brought me a lot of pain and suffering at the moment because I felt personally attacked. And this is, if you feel personally attacked, whether it's, a rude comment about your gender or your ethnic group, it's important to practice mindfulness like we just did, right? At the moment, if we can feel into being maligned unfairly, if we need to step away, we step away to take care of ourselves, we might in the relationship. Continue to cause us harm with whatever the beliefs they're choosing to be attached to themselves, whatever their conditioning is. But if we're, if it's a relationship that we value and we want to stay in a close relationship with that person and open to them, we want to calm ourselves down, lick our wounds, maybe make some, set some boundaries and make some requests of them. You what you said and the way you said it felt harmful to me. It really hurt, and I'm going to ask that you not say those things around me. Or, and it's really important to practice. At the end of our practice, we practice some self-compassion and loving kindness. This is the time to really practice self-compassion for ourselves, because we've been hurt. This is not an attachment to a view. This is someone else attacking us. It's important for us to really, whether it's conscious or unconscious, to take care of ourselves first. A lot of people want to bypass and take care of the person who harmed them. Oh, they don't, they're just not sure. They didn't know what they were saying. I'm going to send them loving kindness. No. No, we need it first. And then if we want, if we have some extra, we're feeling better, less triggered, we want to send to them, that's great. Thich Nhat Hanh, do not be idolatrous about or abound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. Buddhist systems of thoughts are guiding means. They are not absolute truth. Right? We can even get attached to our Buddhist views. Well, the Buddha said it. Well, the Buddhist teachings are, I went to a retreat, and you know how people talk beforehand? And there were two Buddhists, they presented themselves as teachers, were arguing vehemently about some of the Buddhist teachings. And I was sitting there going, well, this is kind of ironic. Judgmental mind, of course, was kicking in. Anyhow, so to help us deal with our attachment to views, our own attachment to our own views, whether the view is accurate or rooted in, truth or is a wise view, we want to first recognize if we're attached by, if a lot of suffering comes with that view, right? If a lot of, anger and reactivity, whatever comes with that view, then we might want to soften into it and say, whoa, there's some attachment here. Can I soften? Can I question this view? Can I let go of it a little bit? Can I continue to see how much suffering it's causing me? It can be helpful to expose ourselves to other people's views and practice seeking to understand. Seeking to understand. Not necessarily understand their view, but understand what is motivating them to hold that view. I had a family member who had completely different views on economics and politics, and they got really frustrated with me and were telling me, "How could you be so ignorant to me about my view, about my position and views?" And he was getting rather upset. So I said, "Well, I want to understand what has you think that this is helpful? Like, what are you thinking? What's behind it?" And come to find out that he was listening to a completely different economist, and he had a completely different beliefs about facts that were happening, and that he felt that his beliefs were going to bring all, he wanted people to be happy and people to be economically be able to support themselves, and he wanted people, what he considered to be fairness, but he just believed that something else was going to bring it than I did. So I told him what my economist that I listened to was saying, and it sounds like we're getting different information, different facts, and we shared economists' names, and I said, "I'll listen to yours, you listen to mine." Right? Anyhow, what didn't turn into this big, bad, ugly, "What are you talking about?" So inquiry practices can help us weaken our attachment to views. When we're sitting in meditation, we can question our strong views that come up. Sometimes a strong view or a judgmental mind may come up. And there are certain things that you can say, like, "Huh, is that so? Or maybe so, maybe not. Maybe my economist doesn't know what they're talking about. Maybe their economist is accurate. Let me do some more research." But it's really important to notice how that view is affecting the body, how it's affecting the mind, the contraction that comes up with that view. Ken, you might ask a question, "Can I be 100% sure that my view is 100% true?" And then I forgot her name. She has the inquiry process where she says, "Who would I be without this view or belief?" Oh, the name came and left. Huh. Anyhow, go with people with varying views. The first thing we want to know is we want to take care of our own reactivity, because we can't be active listeners seeking to understand if we're, too reactive ourselves. I was able to keep myself grounded in the present moment with this family member I was talking to, take care of my own reactivity so I could continue the conversation. But if I'm overreactive, this may not be a time to have the talk. But if you can be there, you don't need to share their view. You just want to bring curiosity, curiosity to your own contraction, curiosity to your own thought processes, curiosity to their beliefs and thought processes. We want to allow them to have their views, even if their views seem diluted to us, right? Why? Because they're going to have those views whether we agree or not. And oftentimes, sometimes things that we say might spark a new way of thinking for someone, but oftentimes nothing we say is going to make a difference. So we just want to allow them to and accept that they have that view. It helps us have stop the war of needing to change their view. Does that make sense? And it pulls us out of judgmental mind and condemning mind. If the person is someone we can talk to, we may want to have a conversation like I did with my family member about why my view feels more aligned with me and feels, it's aligned with my values or authentic to me, while still allowing them their view. But it doesn't mean that we need to put up with judgment or abuse from others, right? As the story of the Buddha, an angry man was yelling at him, calling him names, insulting him, and the Buddha calmly responded to the man by asking a question. If you give a gift and it's not accepted, to whom does the gift belong? The man said, "Well, it belongs to the giver." And he said, "Exactly. I do not accept your gift of abuse or anger. So doesn't mean that we don't disagree either. We might disagree. We might disagree with them. Because sometimes, you know, it's really important to see that sometimes our views are rooted in wisdom and ethical practice. As my practice deepened, I felt a true interconnection with all beings I didn't used to feel. I began caring deeply about the well-being of all sentient beings, right? And some of you probably are experiencing this. And therefore, out of a personal experience, the heart opening and the mind letting go of a lot of distortions through the practice, I don't condone killing of any sentient beings. You know, I even carry little bugs out and don't want to kill any little beings. So this practice helps us to see when our views are rooted in greed, hatred, or delusion, and when they're rooted in this deep benevolence and caring for all beings. I see now that holding, because of this, in these insights I've had in my practice, I see that holding on to a belief that another human being who's not harming anyone has to be subjugated or to be killed to ensure my happiness is rooted in ignorance. Yeah? Because I cannot truly be happy if others are suffering. If you've taken the Bodhisattva vow, you probably understand this because we're all so interconnected. What happens to you ultimately will impact me on an energetic level. I can't sit there and be happy if others are being harmed because it reverberates, it breaks my heart. So this is why so many people now are choosing to endorse or do business with companies who pay their employees a living wage, who treat their employees fairly. So when we disagree with people, we want to disagree respectfully. There are a lot of ways that we've done it unskillfully, like, you have no idea what you're talking about, or really? Psh, come on. We don't want to do that, right? Because that's coming out of judgmental mind, anger. The Thich Nhat Hanh used to say, take care of your anger. Hello, anger. I'm here for you. I'm going to take care of you. I used to love when he would say things like that. I've been on a couple of his retreats. Bring compassion to ourselves when we're in reactivity. Wow, this is really hard. You know? If this is a really charged topic for you, you might need to reduce how much time you spend consuming the news. Right? Sometimes we get so overreactive because we keep hearing more and more bad news on whatever it is. We might need to moderate how much information comes in until we can feel some balance of the heart and mind. So when you feel more balanced, you and if you view the relationship, if you value the relationship, I call them tier one or tier two, then choosing a time that works best for both of you to have the conversation, choosing I statements, using I statements, not you or they, because those are usually perceived defensively. Being really clear and honest about, you know, what affects me, what my values or whatever are. You don't need to get performative, dramatic, just be yourself, whether online or in person. Hard conversations are often best done over the telephone or in person, if you really care about the person. As a therapist, I've seen so many people come in and traumatic reactions to texts or social media conversations. Yeah. You know, I had a new friendship I was developing. This other person said some things about Palestinians that felt really hurtful. And he said, "Oh, there are bad actors on all sides over there." Right? He brought up the whole thing, said, "Well, Hamas brought it on to everyone else, and there are bad actors on all sides over there." Anyhow, I was so triggered, I had to stop the con, I had to just change the subject. Because I know people who've been killed. It was just too upsetting for me. And I had to go and take care of myself. And then when I came back, when I felt more balanced, I came back and said, I had some negative reactivity to your comments because, first of all, my personal experience, which I named, and then I said that over 67,000 Palestinian civilians have been killed. 20,000 of them have, children. I have family member in the West Bank who are scared to death to leave their homes because Palestinians are being shot indiscriminately by settlers. And for you to reduce it to bad actors on both sides felt very hurtful to me. Anyhow, they apologized and said that, what I actually meant was the whole Middle East has bad actors. Other countries are not helping them, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay. But this is not easy. And it's gonna get messy and you're gonna make mistakes. We all do. It takes a lot of courage to be clear with ourselves and then direct. It takes patience and self-compassion to be with our reactivity. It takes wisdom because when we can bring mindfulness to our reactivity, wisdom grows and we see we can be open to other people's perspectives. People are going to have different opinions based on their conditioning. It's going to be different from our own, and this is a normal part of being a human being. But speaking truth to one's experience, to one's own experience, can be powerful. Lashing out angrily at others usually has a negative effect and has other people become more embedded in their views. But if you're from a Zen background, the fierce warrior, it might be a good thing to interrupt a really negative view. I don't know. I hear other people teachers say that they like to speak truth to, Anyhow, but we need to take care of ourselves. And this is I'll Meet You There by Rumi. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make sense. So, thank you very much for your kind and attentive listening. Much appreciated. I wanted to thank anyone if that does donate ahead of time. Thank you all for your donations. It helps me be able to continue to bring the teachings. I'm helping lead a retreat or assist a retreat right now, so helps me be able to continue to do this work. And continue to deepen my own practice so I can continue to bring that to everyone else. And Sangha Live is an international platform. A lot of people here do not have opportunity to be at Sangha, so it really supports them in being able to bring these beneficial practices to people that don't have Sanghas in their communities. So great, thank you so much. All right, so let's go to discussion or questions that you might have.
Just a reminder that if you'd like to come on screen, please just raise your hand, and we can invite you to unmute yourself, and come on. You can also put a question in the chat if you prefer to do that as well. Bartek, yes, please do unmute yourself.
Hello, hi. Hello, can you hear me? Oh, hi.
Yes.
Hi, Rania. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
Hi. You said something interesting about that we cannot feel happy knowing that others are suffering, right? But there, on other hand, those qualities in the heart, like joy, we also need to cultivate. So it's a fine balance because we know there's suffering and there will always probably be suffering, somewhere in the world. We cannot help everyone. And sometimes we do need to, and sit knowing that this is as much we can do and help others. And still, we need to somehow live our lives, and look after our mental health also, and try to be as positive as we can. And you said it that the news, the social media, they're influence us a lot, and drawing our minds into negative states of mind because of the focus, and what's their thing is most important. But yeah, to keep this joy and to still have a happy life, I think it's quite important, part in our practice too, right? Because otherwise, it'll be quite a dry practice for everyone. What would you say, about that cultivating joy as well in those times when there's so much negativity, and even in your case, in your country where there's so much suffering has happened, and it's still ongoing, How do you keep your mind, in balance in those times?
Yeah, thank you so much for
Rania.
bringing that
Thank you.
really, I'm glad that you brought this up because balance of the mind is what we need in order to be able to hold all of our experience with wisdom, equanimity, right?
Yeah.
And if we're in the suffering all the time, and if I'm embedded in, oh, I can't live until everybody in the world is happy, then don't have a balance of mind. I'm lost in my own dukkha, and I'll not progress at all in my practice. I need to have some joy, which is true.
That's true.
And the joy is a different kind of joy. It's a joy that we cultivate through mindful awareness, through seeing the beauty in life, through being open-hearted and seeing a child play or hearing a bird sing, being present with our breath and the beauty of an amazing miracle of the body. This is deep joy that we cultivate that's so meaningful and necessary because it brings us, keeps bringing us back to not only to the moment, but to our practice, right? And it motivates continued and deep practice. And it also opens our heart to the suffering of other beings. Then we realize that we need both, right? We need to continue to cultivate the joy. And some of us get motivated on the bodhisattva path where we're like, okay, I want everyone to experience this joy, if at all possible, if it's their karma, if it's our karma to experience it. And the suffering I was talking about is if someone else has to suffer for me to be happy, I can't be. This is not true joy. This is not true happiness. But it's really important to balance them. And so that joy can ex coexist while other people are suffering, but it also makes it more poignant to compassion grows and we have more motivation to want to free others from their dukkha as well, if that makes any sense.
Yes, of course. Yeah, thank you. I agree with this. And
Yeah.
Rohania, one more thing, if I can ask. It's about the views of others, and if there is anything we can do, to help them, to understand more clearly if we know they're wrong, and how we work with others' strong views and opinions, you know, or are we just protecting our own mind, you know, and that's where our work is, in your opinion.
Yeah, so, you know, the person, the family member I was talking about that had radically different views from my own, now share my views. This is 5, 6 years later, which is really interesting. But not everyone who's really attached to their views is going to be open to my views. And I think, you know, I hate to use the word intuition, but for me, I use intuition to sense whether the blockade is so strong, their attachment to their views is so strong that it would just be experienced as an insult if I were to say, you know, if they were just go on the absolute attack if I were to say anything. And the timing is really important. So there's sometimes you sense, oh, there's a little bit of softening or opening. This might be a good time to have a conversation. Or just, you know, I've listened respectfully to their views and asked them if they're willing to respectfully listen to you, you know, are you open to hearing my different view? And if they say, oh, blah, 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 then they're not open. Move on with my day. You know, some people are tier one relationships. Some people are tier two. Some people are tier three, depending on how they come at you. They might go into a lower tier relationship. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. I kind of relate to the intuition, because you can sense if they're in a not happy place or where they in the if they're suffering, maybe they will be more open to the other views, you know, and sometimes, yeah, the timing, it is important, you know, and while talking with them, you see if they change the subject quick and talk about completely something else, you know, they're not interested, you know, in what you're trying to say, or if it's important to, let's say, to me, and they quickly change the subject, something like this. And that intuition will tell you, you know, that they don't want to hear it, or they will, you know, they will not open, you know, to your view and opinion. Then, yeah, I agree with that. Definitely.
Yeah, it's a dance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You're dancing with them, and sometimes you take the lead, sometimes they take the lead, and you're just feeling into the situation. People soften when we're open to their views more, when we're like, oh, trying to understand. They're more soft, and they're a little bit more willing to listen to us. That's what I found. But,
yeah. That's great. Thanks, Ronja. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Ronja, there's a question from Lee in the chat, if you can see it.
Okay.
It would be great if you could read it out, actually, for the recording.
Yeah, you want me to read it out loud? I have, regarding viewpoint, I think that you mentioned, I have two new neighbors who are around 25 years old. In the last 5 weeks, they have had three parties that bothered me. I'm not good with noise, even if the noise sometimes can be loud, other times not loud. I'm trying to look at their viewpoint. I'm 51 years old. Maybe I enjoyed doing a bit of partying in my early 20s. I did tell them once it was a bad thing to do late via text, but after a week they did that again. I guess loving kindness is needed on my end, that things are impermanent and it ain't every night this happens, just like your thoughts. Yeah, that's a hard one. Anyone else can relate to that? Show of hands. Anybody had a, oh, Lee, you're not alone. Okay, that's a really hard one, because we need sleep in order to function, and we're not gonna sleep if there's a lot of noise. Yeah, so self-compassion is, I really need to, you know, how many nights a week are you willing to let them partying? Is it every, you know, once a month, once a week, once, never? I think it's really important to get clear on what you're willing to tolerate. And then I had this with a neighbor. I went and shared with them that their late night, partying and screaming and music and everything was keeping me up at night, and asked them to please only do it on the weekend, not during the week. They continued, and I told them, if you continue, I'm going to call the police. So I gave them, yeah, because I need to sleep. I had sound machines, fan going, you know, all kinds of stuff. And they still, it was blaring above everything. So I think you just have to take care of yourself and compassion for yourself. I did end up calling the police. And they ended up getting quiet. But, you know, it's not easy. Thank you. Anyone else? And if it's just you sharing something that worked for you and working with different viewpoints, or one thing you've learned that doesn't, feel free to share. If you totally disagree with what I said, that's fine too. Yeah. This reminds me that sometimes silence is a great response.
Anya, could you say a little bit more about what you mean by being attached to a point of view? I'm just wondering kind of what that actually means in practice, like kind of how it feels. And how you relate to your point of view, because it's, I think if you feel that your point of view is considered, and you do kind of feel that you're right, or maybe that you have right view, then how can you not be attached to that? I find that a kind of difficult concept.
Yes, that is a difficult concept. You know, I think if we have a right view and we see that someone's being harmed, either ourselves or others, there's going to be a natural negative reaction to that. That's, I think, part of being a human being. But when we go get lost in mental formations and proliferation, and we're just, you know, get lost in all these thought streams, angry at them, and continue to repeat the same things over and over again. And then we start rehearsing our angry reaction, what we should have said or what I could say, or we continue to replay the argument over and over again. And then we write really long, angry or frustrated email, and can I go on and on and on? Then we clearly have passed to attachment to our right view. We've fallen into that attachment to the right view. And this, yeah, a lot of the mind really grabs hold of it. And all this papancha, this negative mental proliferation that continues, and it causes us to not be very aware during those hours or days that it happens. It takes the joy out of life. Then we tend to be more overreactive to a lot of other things. We send the angry email or text, that then we want to talk to other people and garner support for our being right and their being wrong. You know, it's just, it gets really, 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 it grows like a fungus. And then we spread it on so many people, and it gets really difficult. So that's when we have an attachment to our right view. And then we want to practice being with our reactivity. Right, that's when we go and sit with mindfully with our reactivity and take care of our anger, take care of our frustration. We reduce the amount of stimuli. We choose not to talk to anyone else about this unless it's our therapist that we want to process with. You know, we want to engage in wise speech when we do finally talk to them. Is that helpful?
Yeah, it is helpful. So it's kind of a feeling of having the view, but maybe having some space around it rather than being fixated on it.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Like when that new forming friendship said those things, I had to go. I was in such reactivity. I had to go and take care of my reactivity before I could respond because I was obviously attached to my view and that, you know, they said something really hurtful to me. And then once I took care of my reactivity, then I could be balanced and be like, oh, okay, let me just speak truth to what I'm experiencing and see what they actually meant, and found out they meant something totally different from what I. Yeah. Good
Thank you.
question. Yeah,
Thank you.
thank
Spence, would you like to unmute yourself?
Thank you. Yes, really enjoyed your talk today, Rania. And you know, when you mentioned about the people or the two Buddhas who are arguing about something, it brought to mind something that's really been on my mind for the last year or so. You know, I don't have any about the afterlife. I don't really have any definitive on whether we're going to reincarnate or whatever we're going to do. And I don't feel like I need to worry about that. I just, you know, kind of live my life. But there's a Dharma teacher I've been following for a long time, who adamantly believes that they're in reincarnation and there's nothing, and anyone else that disagrees is just wrong. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh was not a fan of reincarnation. You know, if you read The Art of Living, he talks about it being a part of a Hindu mythology, and that it sort of kind of basically kind of contradicts the concept of non-self. And so he kind of felt like it's a distraction from staying in the present moment, to be worrying about our future. And I think trying to, it's kind of like frequent flyer points, earn some frequent flyer points so you can, you know, upgrade. And you know, what's your real motivation? Is it really to help people, or is it up to upgrade, that sort of thing? So and he had some great, but some very nice ways of explaining it when he was asked about it. He would say something like, he would say, well, you know, I'm so sorry. I've been spending so much time trying to stay in the present moment. I really have to focus on that. But anyway, so but this teacher is just adamant that Thich Nhat Hanh was wrong, and that it's absolute fact. And I can't find the facts, you know, unfortunately, to and it kind of takes away somewhat from my appreciation of the person's teachings, who have it's really good teachings. But being so attached to that view, it seems like it's almost contradicts, you know, the teachings of the Buddha as far as being overly attached. Yes, the Buddha sort of went along with it, I think, because, you know, it's kind of like the sun rising. You know, they thought over there, this, you know, it's similar. It's just a fact because it had been around the culture for so long. It's kind of like Christians believe in, you know, in the heaven and hell and all that. But everybody, whatever culture you grow up in, is generally what are you like ascribe to, is what you believe as stories of the afterlife. And there's been hunt, you know, the Egyptians, you know, they thought they were going to take all their stuff with them, which was kind of an interesting one. But there's just so many different afterlives to choose from out there. It's like a smorgasbord, and to claim one of them is right and the other ones are wrong. It could be that reincarnation is absolutely right. I don't know. But it's just kind of, it's hard for me to really, I love it, you know, to deal with that from trying to connect with a teacher, you know?
Yeah.
So I just wonder what your thoughts were about that.
Well, it sounds like there's an attachment to a view there. But I would, of course, never say that to them. You know, people ask me, is there such a thing as reincarnation? Is it true? Blah, blah, blah. I usually say, I don't know. I'm not dead yet.
Right.
So I'll tell you after I die, because I don't remember. But I have on retreats had a lot of long retreats. I've had visions of past life experiences that felt real, real, like really real. Like I was reliving something that had happened to me, but I was in a different body, different, sometimes gender, different. And because of my direct experience with these visions and these experiences, I've been like, oh, seems like I've had different conscious, you know, lives. So I tend to lean in that direction, but it is a distraction. What does it matter? You know, I have this pattern and habit to deal with in this lifetime. So what that it took, you know, how it got conditioned. Right now is what matters. Right now is what matters. That's what the practice is. So, you know, if it's going to be a distraction to believe in this reincarnation stuff, then I would say let that go if you can. And if it's not, if it supports you in wanting to practice more, I think it was a marketing message for the Buddha. Look, you're going to be stuck in this wheel forever if you don't do it now.
Exactly.
Now is the time. So I don't know. I don't know if it was just a marketing message or if it's true, but I guess we'll all find out at some point.
I think in Christianity it is. It really fills up a lot of pews, gets a lot of donations and things like that, heaven and hell, that sort of thing. But I think going back, this idea that we know exactly, we don't, at this point, science doesn't really understand consciousness very fully, okay? And another thing we don't understand is intuition as part of consciousness. We don't really understand where that comes from. And, you know, it could be coming from, who knows where it's coming from, but we don't know yet what intuition is all about. And sometimes our intuition is correct, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it's fantasy. We don't necessarily know where dreams come from. We kind of have an idea, but we don't know. But once we understand what consciousness really is, I think then from a scientific point of view, then we can start maybe 150 years from now, 20 years from now, we may understand what happens to us when we pass away or something. But right now, we don't get it. We don't know what it is. It's just still a black box to us, you know.
I'm going to appreciate your comment and move on because we're almost out of time. There's been a lot of comments in the. There's a really good one by Rome. Thank you for that, about observing the benefits that come out of the expense of others. Another point, indirect situation, we ought not to take responsibility of others' happiness or suffering, so being aware that others are suffering shouldn't keep us from experiencing happiness or something in that regards, and also shouldn't feel sorry or pity constantly in a manner that causes suffering to ourselves in the long term. Thank you for that. Well, Lorraine, when waking up in the middle of the night, there's a point where thought can begin, which wakes up. Would you share your experience with training the mind to shift to an empty space by will? You know, that happens, empty space by will. That's a good question. And that comes from a lot of practice, right? When you have a lot of deep practice and you experience more and more spaciousness, more emptiness, then the more that we directly experience emptiness and spaciousness, the more that we can go there more easily, right? Sometimes it's accessible to us and sometimes it's not, depending on how crazy the mind is in the middle of the night. Sometimes it's really intense. And the best that we can do is just follow our breath or listen to a calming podcast, But sometimes emptiness is available to us at that time. Oh, could be good to put view, Julius, and our view into hypotheses, even if it feels the truth. It opens space in myself and in the person I'm talking with. So it's like a, not sure, like it's a hypothesis that you want to prove, right or wrong. Is that it, Julius? Or? Well, there's so much more to this, right? Finding that balance, not being lost in our views, not being lost in our suffering, but also not being ignorant to the suffering of others. Being open to that maybe our views are not necessarily all that there is, that the, maybe we can learn more and open more to other people's, at least understanding where they come from. Yeah, so I found that most people are really, really do care. Most people that I've found or met really do care. So may our practice bring us a lot of inner peace and wisdom. And may our wisdom be shared with others, and may they feel it and grow in their own wisdom. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much, Ronja. That was really wonderful session, so rich, such a valuable topic to explore. So really grateful. And thank you everybody for being here, for your great questions and comments and shares. Yeah, really, really lovely session. Really enjoyed it. For those of you in the UK and Europe, if you would like to join us for our daily morning meditations this week, they're being led by our founding teacher, Martin Aylward. So they start at 7 a.m. UK time. They're also recorded. So if you're not in a time zone where you can join us live, you're very welcome to view those recordings on our website. And this session, like all our Sunday sessions, will is being recorded as well and will be posted on our website if you'd like to share it. Yeah, and just one more plug for our Dharana page. Yeah, you literally keep us going and enable us to bring these sessions to you. So if you're able to donate, it is very, very much appreciated, and it really makes a big difference. So yeah, we'll end it there. Thank